Okay. Good morning, everyone. Hope you guys are having a great Tech Ed week, last day here. So one of the things that we're going to be discussing today is how you use BI solutions with SQL Server Parallel Data Warehouse, which we term as PDW, and what specifically in our Appliance Update 3 enables that. So with me today is Arnt Navanez, and he'll be joining me in a few minutes to talk about some of our customer success stories and how they introduced PDW into their existing BI environment and the type of results they got. Also, what we've been doing around Hadoop and big data to enable cross communication with that space. So why don't we get going? So let's see, we reviewed this. So one of the key things I want to level set is that I'm not going to be giving a lot of demos on how to use reporting services or analysis services. I think there's been a lot of great sessions this week on that. But the key is I want to make sure you walk away with the idea that Parallel Data Warehouse is, the goal is to be exactly like SQL Server. So if you have SQL Server instances or an existing BI infrastructure leveraging SQL Server, we want to make sure we can fit right in there and handle your scale needs at great performance, and that's the goal of Parallel Data Warehouse. Okay, so to understand why Parallel Data Warehouse exists, you need to understand the industry. So as you can see, TDWI, which is the industry organization for handling data warehousing, they've researched and understand the basic growth of data over the next 3 to 5 years. And data is not going away. In fact, you're just collecting more and more of it, and you're asking tougher and tougher problems against that big sum of data. So the key there is, to level set, let me understand how many people in here, typically when you're querying your fact table, if you have a data warehouse, how many have to use count big to count it? Otherwise, it fails. Raise your hands. Okay, so decent-sized data. When you get to that scale, when you have billions and trillions of rows in a specific table, you need that kind of ability to handle that scale. Excuse me, that scale. So over time, your data is going to be growing into the tens and hundreds of terabytes and maybe even petabytes. So how do you solve that? In the near term, Forrester really recognizes the need for appliances, and they're a well-accepted practice to introduce an appliance which is specifically dedicated to handling your data warehouse needs in that scale. They also provide that ability to easily administer them, they're self-managed, and they're specifically tuned for this workload. And that's key. It's a lot of DBA and system administrator efforts go into maintaining and performance tuning hardware and building out your infrastructure to handle this scale. That's what the appliances really solve, and that's what PDW does. Over the long term, we see ourselves moving to the cloud. That's what the direction is appearing to be. Want to offload that into an environment where you have elasticity. Been a lot of sessions talking about cloud and private cloud at the conference, so please review those. But the longer term is a ways away. So at least 4 years, we're seeing that appliances have that steady spot in the market to solve these problems and grow with you as you need it. All right, so one of the things I wanted to give you an overview on is what is PDW? So since we're the only Parallel Data Warehouse session this week, I wanted to make sure that for those who aren't familiar with Parallel Data Warehouse, you get a good overview, and then we'll explain how we fit into the BI environment. So the key to Parallel Data Warehouse is its scalability. We scale from 5 terabytes all the way to 600. And over time, we're going to be growing into the petabytes. The key there is that you can introduce it into your environment and then add more on. So that flexibility to be able to allow an existing Parallel Data Warehouse to grow is a huge benefit to your infrastructure, in that you can just keep adding on and it linearly scales with your needs. So that growth, as you add on more racks, it just, the performance goes along with it, even though you have that much more data. And we're standards-based. We're very focused on aligning with SQL Server. Originally, this was created from an acquisition of a company named Data Allegro, and that product was the initial foundation for the version 1 product that is PDW today, and we're slowly becoming more SQL Server-like. So we're really just a massive instance of SQL Server that will solve your big data needs. And from the idea of cost, it's very inexpensive from the standpoint of price per terabyte, price performance. When you get into this enterprise data sizes, you need a lot of hardware. Typically, people solve that with scale-up approaches where you have 128 processors or 256 processors. That's a lot of iron, very expensive. What we've done and what many other competitors have done is introduce a solution with multiple just commodity off-the-shelf servers that solve the same problem. You introduce just as many cores processing the data, but it's in a much more efficient and less costly approach. So let's see. So here's a view of what a parallel data warehouse rack looks like. This is our basic one-rack appliance. You'll see that it has 10 compute nodes on the right side, and that is where your actual user data lives. So you'll notice that it's multiple servers, and we slice up the data and land it on those different servers in a way that allows it to process each data as a slice. And so it's much less data each server is actually working on, and that's key to solving the problem of big data. You'll note that each server has dedicated storage. These are fiber-attached storage devices. So it's a SAN, but they're specifically dedicated to each server. So it's not like your shared disk approaches that many systems use. It's dedicated, affinitized storage where you have specific disks assigned to a certain CPU. And I gave a discussion on this, how we do that kind of customization and optimization inside the node for you, so you don't have to do it as an administrator or an IT manager. The key there is making sure that you don't have a lot of random I.O., because for data warehousing, you need that sequential I.O. to get the maximum speed out of the spindles. And so there's a previous discussion on this at the 2010 Tech Ed you can look up online, and I go into great detail on how we do that and how it works. You'll also notice we use InfiniBand as our backbone. So we don't want to be have a lot of latency on data movements throughout our network, so it's a very high-speed fabric for moving data. It's 40 gigabits a second, and it's actually getting faster. It's going to be 50 gigabits with our next release. The key there is just low-latency movements, not a lot of CPU hit when you're actually moving data. It's very, very effective at just raw throughput. And then we have a control rack. This is what's used to communicate with your enterprise network. This is where the client drivers would connect to, so you have a wire that's connected to your LAN there for access. There's also data center monitoring, a set of management nodes, which are basically for monitoring the hardware. We manage that for you, though. And so if you have an existing infrastructure of monitoring devices, they can plug into our health information and health model and understand exactly what's going on. Even when you have a huge rack or a set of racks, like 40 nodes, we just simplify the view of that. Since it is an appliance model, it makes it much simpler to monitor and manage from that standpoint. These nodes also handle the servicing and upgrades for your appliance. There's also a ETL load interface. So we didn't want the high speed and massive data loads to impact any of your reporting and query abilities. So it's through a separate interface that we allow you to do loads. There's an API to load those in parallel into the appliance, and that's through this landing zone node. There's also a backup node, which is for staging backups. So we allow you to do full and differential backups. And the key there is we do it in parallel across our InfiniBand network to this backup node. Again, it offloads it from the control node, which processes the data, but it manages to have minimal impact on your normal workload, queries, loads, to make sure it's fast and efficient. So that's whether you're using tape or other backup fiber solutions, they can be done at a later time once the data is housed on this backup node. So again, that's just an overview of the hardware side. So let me just explain the actual problem. When you have the scale-out, massively parallel solution, how do you solve these problems? It doesn't seem that hard, right? I mean, typically most people just start adding on SQL servers in your environment and basically shard the data. But our approach is different. So in order to ensure consistency, we want to make sure that everything's done in parallel and we manage it for you, and it's quite complex. When you slice up the data across all the nodes, There's certain ways you have to deal with how to solve certain queries. And so let me walk through a scenario of how we land the data on the nodes. So one of the things we do at PDW is we allow you to still replicate data to each node individually. So take this simple star schema design. Basically, you have the smaller dimensional tables which describe all the information that's in the fact table. So these small tables can live in full on each node within the system. And the key there is, I'll explain in a little bit why that matters, but when you take the large fact table, let's say it's 20 terabytes, we start slicing it up and hash distributed across the appliance so that you have different slices of the data living on each node. And like I said before, it's a smaller cut of data that each server has to work with, and that is what gives you the huge performance. And so within that, now that we have the ability to replicate the tables, you can then solve more queries without having to move data around the system to properly join, aggregate data. When it's all local, it can execute immediately there, and then you can return the results. The less movements in the system, the better, right? All right, so here's an overview of how we execute a query, just to give you a quick insight into that. So you connect to us like SQL Server, even though we're 10 to 40 nodes, you just connect to us and it'll look like a SQL Server instance. This node, the engine, processes the query and authenticates, authorizes, and then it creates this distributed plan that's executed against the compute nodes in parallel. There, once you're executing, like I said, they're all executed on each compute node. Within the compute nodes, though, let's say there's a situation where you can't solve the problem, like all the data isn't local to that server. You will have to move data around, and we have mechanisms for efficiently doing that, and that's our data movement service, or DMS. All right. So how do we move data around in what we call shuffle? And this is important to understand for when you're dealing with BI and how you solve problems answering questions. If you ask it incorrectly, you can introduce a lot more movement, and so it helps understand when you're carefully planning your data architecture, this type of knowledge matters. So I just wanted to show an example of what happens. So let's say you have a really large fact table. It's distributed across the appliance via a hashing mechanism on this SSID column. The query, the example query that's coming in, isn't looking for grouping by that ID. It's looking for grouping by color. So the goal is to execute it locally on each compute node, but you'll notice that there's some reds on other nodes, blues are separated. So we need to enable the ability to get that data together before we can do that final aggregation. So what we do is we create an instance or a temporary table that houses the data that will be moved around, and then we shuffle it. And what that does is it, in parallel, moves the data at high speeds to localize it so that all of the like data based on this new distribution column, be it color, lands in the correct place, and then you can do that final step where you do that aggregation, and then we merge the results, get it back to the customer. And that happens extremely quickly. It's all these nodes working at the same time, so it's very fast. Here's an overview of what the... Is there a question? Yes. At the central node? Well, that is an option. So we do go through multiple plans, and the key is that when the data is... what can happen is that temporary table can actually be quite large. And so if you localize it and land it on that centralized server, then you could overload that server and then it would fail. So we take that into account, and sometimes those options are available. And we do have movements which would land data on the control node or create a replicated table for the final step or join. So that is a possibility. But we're very focused on making sure that we maintain the scalability in the event that you don't overload one node and run out of disk space or caching. All right. So, again, this is just a kind of view of what are the components inside the servers that exist in the data warehouse. We have an agent, which is doing all the self-monitoring, and this gives us SNMP data, so we work with the vendors to get all of their hardware information for you. So we understand intricately what's going on in the hardware, CPU, DIMMs, things like that, so you don't have to. We provide a single pane of glass through our management console as well as through our SCOM management pack that lets you just at a glance see what's going on, if there's any unhealthy components within the system. And then we also have DMS agents on all nodes where they're SQL servered that might be moved, as well as in the landing zone, which does the parallel loading. And then the PDW engine lives on the control node, which handles all the query requests, things like that. All right. So what's special about AU3? I've described kind of how things work, but the key, as we've been evolving over time, and we go with an agile model where we have much faster releases than typical products. We don't do the two-year release cycles. We try to shoot for every 6 months. And so this last cycle, we were very focused on introducing compatibility and focus on integration with customer environments where there's a lot of BI tools, varying tools, third-party tools, not just Microsoft tools, that can work with Parallel Data Warehouse. Since we started, remember, as Data Allegro, and we used this other protocol layer and language, we've been slowly making inroads to be more semantically compatible with SQL Server. And then we also had a very nice focus on performance. And one of the things we noticed as we evolved was that there's a lot of little things that we could change within the appliance that had huge performance impact. And remember, when you're dealing with big data, millions of rows, any latency that's introduced at that row or granular level, makes a huge difference in performance. And so I'll explain what some of those changes were. So just to give you some insight into the engine, this is everything that a database engine does. It does parsing and looking at the grammar. You have to bind that data so that you can understand what objects you're authorized to see, the security models, optimizers. A lot of effort goes into planning query plans, of parallelizing them, understand the distribution model. That was very complex, and we wrote that ourselves. We had that all in our code, but we had to step back and say, look, we're trying to be like SQL Server. SQL Server's already done this. How can we evolve that knowledge and code and leverage it to affect our problem and be more available and semantically alike like SQL Server itself? So what we did is we created this new idea of a shell appliance. And this exists on the control node. We already had SQL Server living on the control node. So what this allowed us to do was all objects are created on the control node with their schema, security information, but no user data. So what this does is it's basically a outline of what your database you think you're creating on the single node is actually being spread out across all the compute nodes. And so the DDL will actually execute against the shell appliance, and that's where you can do your authorization. And then from there, we execute the real DDL against the underlying compute nodes to house your actual user data. And so everything now can be moved into the shell appliance, things like the common security, authentication, authorization, the binding, and also just your general metadata catalog that you depend on. All right. So just to give you an overview of how this would work, a user issues a query, and we pass it through to the shell appliance. Here is where it does the parsing. We no longer do it in the PDW engine. SQL Server does it, and it generates this execution plan with alternatives. Because one of the key things about using a costing-type model for planning your queries is the ability to have multiple plans to choose from. And that's what SQL Server does a great job of. So we return this set of plans as what's called a memo. And then from here, we can figure out how to create our parallel execution plan to solve the problem within our environment, which is different than SQL Server's single box approach. And then we execute it. All right. And then once it's done, the results are returned to the user. Okay. So in order to get...
There's another question.
Oh, sorry. Screen's in the way. The question is there any way to see all the query plans? Are you looking for the individual plan that's executed? Or the choices we have?
The overall big plan that finally gets done.
Yes. That is provided through an explain syntax. as well as you can see it in the DMVs that we have in the system. So there's multiple ways to get it. We had to extend it, so we do have our own. And you can actually get to, remember, when these things execute against the compute nodes, they're executing individual SQL statements, and so you can even get to those as well. So you can see if the SQL Server plans that are executing are what you'd expect, things like that. So we do have interfaces at both levels. All right. So one of the key things we introduced here is this cost-based optimizer. And so we're using SQL Server to do this great intelligence they built over many years for understanding how to solve queries efficiently using statistical methods and making the most efficient plan possible. And so one of the things we get here is it solves, you know, reordering of joins, removing columns, understanding when there's a better plan when you go against the original table versus sub-select temporary tables, things like that. It explores all these different approaches to solving a query and then gives them back to the PDW engine for us to apply our movement ideas on how we think we need to solve the query based on how many movements will be required. And so that type of costing goes into a practice there. And then we actually create the remaining steps with SQL. We generate the SQL statements that are required to actually execute these plans. And so just to give you a quick insight into the cost model, we're only costing, once we get these possible plans back, this plan list, we only care about the data movement steps. And there's interesting issues there because since we're executing each step in our parallel execution plan sequentially, so each step is a sequential step, but we execute them in parallel. The key there is we need to understand all the data movement choices, and they can consist of multiple steps within each movement. Since there's different types of movement, each movement can have multiple readers, potentially reading from distributions, writing. So there's different fixed and overhead or fixed and variable costs that apply to those movements. Let's see. And then one of the things we do currently is we have this uniform distribution assumption where all the statistics come in from all the nodes. So we understand how the data is laid out and we get the statistical information. And this is critical for having a correct plan. And one of with this assumption that everything is evenly distributed, and that means like you have equal size tables across all the nodes, that allows us to make a quick and easy approach for choosing which movement mechanism to use. And so it's an assumption we make, and so sometimes it can cause problems if you do have skewed data. All right. So what's the impact of this new optimizer? As you can see from AU2, which was our last update early in the year, just applying this new mechanism, we saw a huge impact at the query level. And so in general, it was at least 5 times improvement over AU2, which was already extremely fast. Adding this update into your environment, it just immediately took effect. There was no special changes or tuning needed. Immediate impact. And this was a test workload from a SQL Server client, not a PDW client, but just a workload we wanted to try, and huge impact. Okay. So for performance at scale, we really wanted to make sure we eliminated any CPU utilization spent on data conversions. And so let me give you some background on that. Data movement, the DMS engine, the service that runs on each node, is written in managed code. And so when we were reading from SQL Server, we read it out and it had to translate those values into .NET variables. And so there was a cost to actually translate that data into .NET mechanism or .NET variables to move across the network. There was every time a row went through the system, we had to do that. So it's huge overhead if you add it up over time, millions and billions of rows going through the system. We saw an easy change that we could, if we kept it in native code and kept it as close to the SQL Server underlying structures, there would be we'd reduce the CPU overhead that was induced, and therefore get much more parallelism in the system because you're allowed to have more concurrency, more concurrent things going on without this CPU overhead. And so just from that alone, we saw a major impact on the different types of movements that can happen. Very simple change that increased the efficiency of the system, especially concurrently in mixed workloads, which is the common situation in your data centers, right? You're executing loads and queries all at the same time, especially if you want almost real-time information in your data warehouse. This is key, and this is what AU3 gave us, much better throughput from a concurrency standpoint. Let's see. Okay. So now, as I mentioned earlier, with SQL Server, now we have the same identical semantics from a security perspective. So everybody who administers a database, you have your scripts on how to set up users, roles. Now we match SQL Server exactly. So when you put PDW into your environment, it's just going to work as expected as if it was SQL Server box product. And then we have the like metadata queries as well. So we have DMVs that match as well as the catalog tables that you're used to using. All of our distributed information is moved into separate views that are accessible. So you can join when you need those situations where you need to understand the distribution model underneath it. The same table views for SQL Server exist. And then also you can tie that in. So it gives you flexibility. But it is that common interface that everyone programs to for SQL Server, which allows us to have this foundation for other tools that aren't familiar with PDW yet to still work on PDW. So it really helped our the base of establishing third-party connectivity. Okay, and now we also are moving away from this original protocol we were using at Data Allegro. This is now allowing us to have SQL Native Client as the driver for connecting to PDW. This is key for the future. I mean, we want to be SQL Server. We have to use the same drivers. Makes it easier from a distribution standpoint. You're just able to light up query. It's a different port you connect to. It's not 1433. It's 17001. But you connect to us like SQL Server, and it just works. So now we also have SQL CMD functionality. So if you need a command line query tool, we still have DWSQL, which was the original PDW command line tool, but this is more alignment with SQL in your scripting. We also introduced name parameters. And this was a big ask from people who use reporting services. A lot of queries have many multiple arguments coming into the report, and it was very confusing. In the earlier releases, we only allowed question marks, and now the named parameter support had huge impact in supporting and maintaining those reports and queries. Just from this alone, we saw a performance improvement as well. We got 2x over normal return operations, so just streaming the data back, it was 2 times faster with TDS, so much more efficient. Time-tested drivers that we're using now, which is great. And also just connection time, which Artin's going to show an example of. Just the impact of having these new drivers made much faster connections, which if you're using scripting and you have multiple, like especially for ETL operations, you're constantly connecting, querying, disconnecting. It has huge impact on your overall runtime. Okay. Now we have stored procedures as well. Earlier versions, this was a huge ask. We didn't have stored procedures, now we do. Very effective, I think everybody understands the importance of stored procedures. Same T-SQL syntax, we allow the RPC and just T-SQL executes of stored procedures. Obviously the benefits, you can port your existing code over. There are a few limitations due to time. We had to release quickly due to our constant release cycles. So we don't have the ability to store proc currently. We don't have the ability to nest stored procedures. So a stored procedure can't call a stored procedure yet. It's coming in a near-term release, as well as output parameters, return values, and the try-catch exception handling. Just wanted to point that out. We also have collations now for our international customers and people who store international data. Fantastic ability to be able to move PDW into the international market, have consistent grouping, query ability, comparison with the introduction of collations. Same T-SQL syntax, we have the collate clause introduced that allows you to specify columns, tables by their collation. Two limitations here. We don't have the database level collation setting now, so you still have to set it at the table level. And then once it's set, you can't alter the column at this time, coming in a near-term release though. All right. So one of the areas we focused on for our improved integration effort was Hadoop. And I think there's been several sessions here talking about Hadoop and big data and this unstructured store of data that's out there. And it's becoming more and more popular as this housing of big data. And so people want to get that data into their data warehouse and use their existing BI infrastructure to query and compare it to data that's already housed in the structured world, which is your database. We saw a huge impact, and we also created the SQL Server Hadoop connector as well as the SQL Server PDW connector. So this allowed this cross-communication between Hadoop and SQL Server. We also introduced our Informatica connector. So for those doing ETL with Informatica, we have a inline connector that shows up in Informatica now that says Parallel Data Warehouse. So you can use this as a target and source for Informatica. We also have integration with business objects. So there's now a business objects in the drop-down for a source Parallel Data Warehouse that you can add in if you're using SAP tools. All right. So now I'd like to invite Artin to discuss some of our customer successes and how we've been applying this new ability with Appliance Update 3.
Thank you, Matt. My name is Artin. I'm a program manager. And I would like to continue this presentation by showing, emphasizing, highlighting the actual impact on what Matt has shown here with the AO3 improvements on actual BI solutions of our customers. And I would like to start by sharing the results of a performance comparison we did with one actual PDW customer, a retailer. And we compared here the query response time of their old system with PDW. And as you see here, and each QEC, a Q1 to Q7, stands for a BI query or class of BI queries. For each of these classes, you see in order of magnitudes faster query response time, which was a huge value for this particular customer because they wanted to basically improve their entire BI query response time. And what we basically did, we went to the customer and we tried to understand how they're benefiting from PDW by moving to PDW from an SMP world in general, as well as to understand the AO3 impact, the improvements which we introduced in the AO3 release. And what we always saw is a recurring pattern. So first of all, everything starts with a data explosion. So in this particular case, it's a customer located in a financial industry. They had to deal with 80 terabytes of data, and it's still growing. So their old system, and they used the SQL Server farm here, was not anymore able to handle that huge amount of data. So they came up with requirements, with new requirements. So they didn't want only to scale, as we have emphasized, as Matt has emphasized, scalability is a huge requirement. But also, and I would like to highlight that, they had strict loading requirements. So it's not like 10 or 20 years ago in the data warehousing where you load your data over the weekend or over the night, but rather you would like to have it even every day, hourly. So how can you ensure that this loading will not impact your performance and query performance, the BI solutions you are running? In this particular case, again, from the stock exchange company, it's 300 gigabyte per day. We have even other customers who would like to load 800 gigabytes per day, up to 1 terabyte. We saw that. And that's a huge requirement. And of course, they want to run their existing BI solutions, their reporting services, their analysis service seamlessly on top of PDW if they move to PDW. Since they are a SQL Server shop, they expect that, basically. So the feedback we got when we asked them, what are your experiences with PDW, and in particular, after introducing AO3 and upgrading them to AO3 was, that we could see that the investment we put into the compatibility, into increasing the compatibility, which Matt highlighted before, was really paying off. So not only that the that we could now seamlessly, or the customer could seamlessly migrate their reporting services to PDW, they also saw the performance impact. But not only performance is here an important factor, and that's the last bullet point, it's that this particular customer could now run even queries or complex BI queries which they couldn't run in their old infrastructure, old system. So here they can get even more knowledge, more insights out of the data. Another second customer, it's a major retailer, it's Hy-Vee here in the U.S., who had also the strict requirement to get many or lots of data from different resources, not only from operational database management systems. And here in this case, they had to deal with 36 terabytes of data. And what you also see pretty often is that the business requirements, business needs are changing. So Hy-Vee decided not only to take one-year-old data, but rather to include more historical data to be able to make better decisions or getting better knowledge out of the data. Again, the data explosion as a result. The requirements are pretty much the same, and I will not repeat them, but what in particular Hy-Vee told us is, again, pretty much similar to what the other customer explained, was that they had, in this case, not reporting services, but instead a lot of AS cubes, which they developed over years, and they wanted to seamlessly deploy and execute them, and this was possible now with PDW, with the corresponding impact on performance. So how does PDW now can be seen and positioned into the entire BI stack? And I think it became now clear that PDW as a data warehouse solution is not only a data hub, but it can be used to create in a very fast fashion, in a parallel fashion, different data marts which business analysts can then use to query. And that's in particular backed up by the strong InfinityBand technology. So as Matt has highlighted, now you are able to even move lots of data within PDW to create these data marts. And if you look back also 10 years ago or 20 years ago, there was always the trade-off a business BI analyst or BI architect, a data architect, has to do between performance and latency. So if you have to deal with a lot of data, typically you created aggregation via for example, materialized views to reduce the amount of data and to query them more efficiently. So you sacrificed your latency for performance. So here with PDW, you're not anymore forced to do that. So performance is given, so you can reduce the latency. You can create, you can run complex aggregate queries without having indexes or materialized views. So what are the differences now to how to design BI scenarios, BI apps on top of PDW compared to an SMP solution? There are two major categories we observe when we talk with the customer. So one are specific to PDW, and that's the first bullet point referring here to a product limitation which we currently have, is that with PDW you're not able currently to model foreign key constraint and to model complex parent-child relations. But we are addressing that with the next major release also to close here the gap, the feature gap. The next two bullet points are referring more to the architecture itself. So first of all, as Matt highlighted, PDW is a shared nothing model. So you are distributing the data across the compute nodes. So if you now create a BI solution or scenario, it's not like in a SMP world anymore, where if you change the data, let's say you are adding a column to a table, and then you change your query, including that particular column now, for example, as a join predicate, it's not anymore like this, that the performance impact will always, the impact on the performance, on the query performance, will always be the same. Because we have now here a distributed environment. That means we're distributing data. And by including, for example, an additional column in your query, can make query now incompatible. That means it will introduce potentially data movements. So as a BI architect, you need to be very careful how you are changing your schema, how you're changing the queries. It's not like that you you can expect that no impact on performance will be there. And finally, yeah, so we have the concept, and I can show that in a second, the explain. So you can always explain a query before you're running. So it will never run before. You can see what kind of data movements are in the query. So you can see if you degrade your query plan. And finally, of course, since we are now able to process cubes in parallel, it's also mentally changing your mentality of how you design cubes. You are now able to process these cubes in parallel, either via MOLAP or roll-up storage model. The second category of change here is just simply specific to the large amount of data you're dealing with. Even if you have now a strong processing engine, such as PDW, even if you have a strong server where you run your BI apps or your BI server on, we have seen in our customers that still there are bottlenecks which can appear. One particular customer wanted to process at a certain time 15 partitions at the same time. And they experienced query timeouts. So they reached out to us. We looked into it. And we could see that now the network link between the PDW appliance and the BI server became the bottleneck. Just couldn't keep up with the data which were moved over that link. So you should be also here cautious and careful that even if you have an MPP solution, does not always guarantee that each BI query will run in a fast fashion. And related but orthogonal to it is what we also see is that BI tools, as of now, are not really designed for handling huge amount of data. The data explosion which you see now in recent years is just too much as that BI tools can keep it up, and that may change over time with in-memory techniques, et cetera, but this is also one particular lesson we learned. So let me show you, as Matt indicated, a simple example how to connect, actually, with Power Pivot to PDW. It's a very simple example. It's no fancy BI scenario involved, but it can show you how we improve not only the performance aspect by connecting with SQL Native Client, but also to increase the customer experience. Because in AO2, or prior to AO3 release, a customer, if they wanted to connect with PowerView, had actually to go to from other sources. So you see here from database, it includes SQL Server. But since we relied on a third-party connectivity, the customer had to go to from other source. Here was a parallel data SQL Server data warehouse tab. And what has to be done was that the customer had to define a so-called IDS file, which contains certain properties, in this case OLDB properties, such as IP address and so forth. Let's choose the temp table, and could then connect. But what the customer has to do is to define that IDS file. So imagine now an environment where you would like to share, basically, with your team members. So you always have to maintain this IDS file. You have to configure it if things are changing. So it's error-prone, and it's hard to maintain. And now, with aligning with SQL Server, Native clients, you couldn't do the same by just simulating SQL Server. So basically, you think you're talking with SQL Server. So you're going now to from database, you choose from. What you do, what you have to do is you need
the IP address.
And as Matt said, we are running it in a different port, 7001. The providers from the third party are running on 7000, so we are ensuring backwards compatibility, so therefore we chose 7001. And now, let's just test the connection. Oh. This was the wrong password, it seems. What is the difference? What have you seen here? Is that much faster, right? So not only that the customer had to maintain this IDS file, but the test or the data return rate. This is a very simple connection statement which is sent, right? It's much faster. Now imagine you are sending millions of rows, and that's exactly that nice experience with this simple example you can see. You had a question? Sorry?
I believe primarily we wanted to avoid any inconsistencies. Since we aren't fully semantically aligned with SQL Server just yet, we didn't want any probing or discovery mechanisms to establish connect to us and think that we're just the box product. And so we want to make sure that we have the specific port for now. And you know, in the future, we'll align with 1433. But we just want to make sure we keep that separate.
I will just quickly go to the integration to third-party, non-Microsoft-based BI solution, because we have chosen to show you a demo with Hadoop. But to highlight here, by aligning with SQL native clients, the example I've shown, you naturally, automatically, basically also align with connectivity to third-party tools. Because SQL native clients is out for years, and that's also a nice side effect. And the current support, as Matt has highlighted, we have connectors for business objects. We have also connectivity now to Cognos and MicroStrategy. That's, I think, popular tools BI architects are using. But again, to highlight, we established just the foundation yet. Right? We need to improve our experience with, in particular, with third-party tools like Cognos, for example, and here to just give you an example, full Cognos support requires certain specific protocol features, which are sent under the hood from that tool to PDW, and which we currently not support. That's current timestamp, date first, and certain set options. But we are already addressing those protocol specific in the next major release. So, how many people have attended Hadoop sessions here? How many people love or like Hadoop? Okay, just two. How many people hate Hadoop? How many people don't really care? Okay, good. I see. I will, in following, not go into detail in how Hadoop, the Hadoop stack works, what are the different products. I think there were a lot of sessions about that. But what I would like to do is to position Hadoop in the context of data warehousing, BI, and ETL. And if you have attended the Hadoop sessions, you always see this as a first introductory slide, that you have lots of new data coming from resources such sensors, such RFIDs. You have new applications like social network applications, which generate unstructured data in the first place. And the BI folks would like to include, not maybe all of the data, but certain portions of the data for their analysis. And Hadoop allows you to do so by not only first to get the unstructured data into a storage grid, so Hadoop as an archive, as a storage, cost-optimal storage grid, but Hadoop allows you also to do the first refinery. So it's actually a pre-step of separating important data from less important data. And you can, or developers can write easily MapReduce jobs to do so, to filter them out. And what we are strongly believing, and I think that's a message I heard at least in most of the sessions, is that Hadoop will not replace a data warehouse or a relational database management system. And that's actually also the experience we make with customers, that instead of replacing, it will coexist side by side. And I would like to show you an example of one of the customers, how they are actually creating BI scenarios by using Hadoop as well as PDW and running BI tools on top of it. And that's the typical workflow we see, and that's a very popular scenario, where you have developers you have the typical DBMS admin, and you have the BI folks. And what happens actually first is that the data gets loaded, or the developers, application programmers as I call it here, are responsible for getting the data into a Hadoop grid. Then they will run certain refinery algorithms, which they have developed. The most common comment we hear about Hadoop is it allows us in a flexible way to do the refinery, to separate less important data from important data. Once this is done, the higher valued data will get loaded into PDW, where then subsequently BI analysts or architects are running the BI using PowerPivot and other tools. So the question here is, and I believe that was also highlighted in several other sessions, is how can we overcome the impedance mismatch between unstructured data on the one side, HDFS data, and structured data of a relational database management system. And what we have done is we have developed a so-called Hadoop PDW connector that is based on Scoop. Scoop is an open source API provided by a company called Cloudera, which we have extended to achieve this goal. How does it work, actually, inside? So I would like to start with the system boundary. So on the one side, you have Hadoop running on Linux. On the other side, you have PDW running on Windows. And we have then also this internal boundary between control and compute node. So what we have the Hadoop nodes, and on the other side, we have our compute nodes. So what happens first is a user can run a Scoop export command. And Scoop provides you such command line utilities. What happens here, or first of all, the user can specify import or source path and target path. Source path is the HDFS cluster, and target is PDW, or tables in a database contained in PDW. In the first step, the connector will invoke multiple so-called mappers who do nothing else than read in parallel fashion the HDFS data out of the cluster and streams it into our landing zone over FTP. Once the data arrives there, the connector will automatically invoke via Telnet DW Loader. DW Loader is the API which Matt was referring to, which allows a very fast parallel loading into our compute nodes. So we are not only parallelizing this way the read process out of the Hadoop data, but also once the data arrives on our side, the parallel loading. That makes it very powerful. Let's see how it works.
One of the things to note while he's getting the demo ready, This is our first release of the Hadoop connector, And as you can see, there is a landing of the data via FTP. Obviously, there's huge gains if we just stream that data in flight, and so that's what the next release is really focusing on, hardening a API that allows us to just in flight move that data from Hadoop into PDW without touching a disk. So benefits to come, but this was our first release, and we wanted to get feedback from the industry on how we're doing things.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah, that's a very important point. But we are, as Matt emphasized, we are releasing in a 6 to 9 month cycle, right? And this was the first phase, and we have way more to come in that regard. So what you see here, I have logged in into a Hadoop Linux cluster. It's actually one node, just for demo purposes. But what you see here is a HDFS file. It's a file. A delimited file. It's the famous line item that contains description of certain properties of the items. And what you can do, and what we use is the latest version of Scoop. Scoop is also providing, or Cloudera is always providing new versions of Scoop. This is the latest version, Scoop 1.4.1. And what you can do, actually,
is to run that Scoop export command.
Right? That's the command I was showing you before on the PowerPoint slide.
By doing so, it will connect.
What happened? Okay.
switch?
Switch?
Yeah.
Okay. One, two. Sorry. Good. So the scoop export command finished. So we exported here 100K records, again, just for demo purposes. Let's see if the data actually arrived on PDW side. So what you see here is a query editor we are using. It's also a third-party query editor. It's called Nexus. And it's pretty much similar to all the query editors out there. And we have the table line item scoop. We exported 100K rows, sorry. Let's see if really 100K rows came on. So I will do a select count, and hopefully
100,000 Ks. So with that simple command, I know it's not very sexy, the scoop export, it's command lines, right? But with this simple command, you are able to get the data out of Hadoop into PDW. And now to complete that workflow, and that's actually exactly what one of our customers are doing, let's get the data into Power Pivot. The database is temp. You can see that here. It's a temp tables, and the line item is there. So let's test it first. Succeeded. Next, we select from a list of tables. You can define also user-defined queries. Yes, that's the table we would like to get into Power Pivot, and the process starts. My apologies, my desktop is not the most advanced laptop, therefore it will take a time, but you can see here the progress. So what I wanted to show here was how easy, basically, you can overcome these boundaries. On the one side, the HDFS data from Linux, unstructured, into PDW, and you can, of course, do the refinery. You can just focus on a particular part of data, get into PDW, and then getting the actual data, the higher value data, into Power Pivot or whatever BI tool you want to use. And that's basically, I think, a nice feature, which is actually also used. And that comes back and concludes the assumption here that Hadoop and PDW will not be fight with each other, but they will coexist and they will be used by our customers. Success, 100 rows. You can close it and hopefully it showed up. And here you see it. So way nicer. Does not look like on Hadoop side, but yeah, you can run basically whatever you want now on top of that data. With that, I'm done with my part. Would like then to ask Matt to wrap up and explain what next great features will come with PDW.
So I'm using your microphone now. Hopefully it doesn't explode.
Okay.
Let's see. Okay, so what's coming next? Well, one of the things I'd like to comment on is you noticed that Arnton was using Nexus, the query tool that we ship with our V1 release of PDW. Now that we've lit up this common infrastructure of communicating with SQL Server, which is TDS and the normal SQL drivers, we're actively onlining all of the normal tools you would use with SQL Server. That includes SSMS, the new data tools approach for developers to interact with SQL Server. So those are going to be our future, and we'll be removing Nexus from the releases in the coming future. So what's coming next? One of the key things we're looking into is adding in the column store to our database. We're expecting huge performance gains here, as well as massive compression advantage for storing your data. So the column store approach, I don't know if you've been to any of the other column store related sessions on SQL Server, but it compresses your data fantastically and offers some great performance. We're also finishing the stored procedure implementation that I mentioned. We're also looking to add in integrated authentication. Currently, it's mixed mode, which is username password, and so we'll be getting Windows authentication in very soon. We're going to support PowerView in the next release, as well as we're making an architectural shift now. We're getting in new hardware, So we've been on hardware for a period of time, and now Intel keeps revving processors. We're moving to the new hardware architectures that are available, so it'll be 8 cores per proc, as well as moving to Windows 8 when it's available, and SQL Server 2012 to get all the great benefits that it offers. So let's see. And with that, just in review, make sure you walk away with the concept of what fundamentally parallel data warehouse is and how we solve this scale-out issue. When you're dealing with huge amounts of data, how do we get that performance to solve your BI needs? I mean, as you can do so much with SQL Server today out of the box, and as you outgrow that environment, we have a solution that's ready for you to plug in your existing BI infrastructure to it. We allow you to grow up to tens of hundreds of terabytes, maybe even petabytes in the coming future, as well as, you know, if you aren't using Microsoft BI tools in your environment today, we support third-party BI tools as well. And so with this latest release, we have that huge performance impact, at least five times performance. But what we've seen is your workload could vary and actually get much more performance improvements from just using the latest PDW version. So with that, I just want to highlight there were some good sessions, a ton of BI tool sessions. If you haven't gotten to all of them, you can still download them through the portal. I also mentioned my deep dive session from 2010. If you want to get that lower level understanding of how the hardware is aligned and tuned, you can tune into that on the internet. And then there's also some other sessions that were interesting around big data. So Hadoop. Hopefully you stopped by our booth downstairs. We're at the Breakthrough Insights area. So if you have any more questions, feel free to stop by. And one thing I'd like to ask, make sure you please fill out the evaluations. It really helps us in planning what works and how we can present more information, whatever you're interested in, next time, too. So with that, I'd love to open up the floor for questions.
We have 30 minutes, so plenty of time. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So just to make sure I understand your question, you're asking, do we still support the internally the SQL Server ability to partition files on the servers themselves, as well as our partitioning across the nodes? Yes, and the answer is yes. So we do have that two levels of partitioning available. So it's not only splitting it across nodes, it's splitting it within the server itself. Yeah. So that's part of our syntax, and we've actually simplified it from the base T-SQL syntax. So it's very complex to manage all the partitioning and the partition schemes, partition functions. We simplified that, and so we have that implemented in PDW right now. So, yep, it is available to you. And we do allow switching of partitions and a great way to manage your data and archive those partitions out. All right, great question. Anything else? Yes? Well, so that's the goal. So everybody, the question is, are we moving to the cloud eventually? And that's the goal. The market is really pushing everybody to the cloud and eventually housing scenarios where you can have an on-premise cloud and a public cloud. And so the goal of Microsoft across the whole company is how do we solve that scenario? So moving to the cloud has promises, obviously, for different OLTP scenarios, but it's also people see the need to have everything in the cloud. So solve that data warehousing problem so you can ask any question and manage it in the cloud so you don't have to have the huge IT expenditure in-house. So, and, yeah, that's the goal.
And to add, what we have done, I think, nicely was solving a large problem of how we can efficiently query in a parallel fashion. And that technology will be basically migrated or will be backported to the cloud. But having said that, I think what I always experience when I talk with big, large companies, in particular, for example, the financial industry, banks, etc., was they still say, yeah, cloud is the way to go for certain type of scenarios. But for complex analysis of sensitive data in particular, you always see that they would like to have at least machines on their side, right? Mm-hmm. So having here PDW does not mean that it's in conflict with a cloud-based solution, but it's actually a complete solution for your different needs.
Well, if the executives at Microsoft had their way, it'd be next year. But it's over the coming next few releases, I would expect. We're talking, I think we talked about the five-year range is what people are expecting to effectively start using the cloud. So we'd like to have a product available, hopefully, in that time frame. So we're really looking to answer those needs when we see the demand will be there for it. So. All right. Well, thank you for coming.
Thanks.
And again, feel free to ping us off the stage here or comment on the evaluations to
We would greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.